In 2020, the state's largest utility announced that it would be acquired by Avangrid, a U.S. subsidiary of the Spanish utility giant Iberdrola. Regulated utilities like PNM require public regulation approval for mergers. PNM's parent company, PNM Resources, also operates in Texas, and Texas regulators have already approved the merger. The Public Regulation Commission approval is the final hurdle that Avangrid faces in the acquisition, but it faces opposition from parties who point to an Avangrid subsidiary's poor service record in Maine and other states, as well as an ongoing investigation into criminal espionage related to Iberdrola executives. We'll discuss that with Public Regulation Commission Chair Steve Fishman. We'll also talk about El Paso Electric's proposed plant on the Texas-New Mexico state line and progress on New Mexico's 40% carbon-free electricity goal by 2025. We'll get started right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon and welcome to Voice of the Public. It's 106. This is KC Counts. Glad to be with you on this Friday, September 17th. We have Public Regulation Commission Chairman Steve Fishman on the line with us and on Facebook, too. Well, we're on Facebook streaming live. We're meeting on Zoom. It's the way we do things these days. I'm sure you've grown to love the Zoom meetings, Steve, over time.
Talking to me, you just got really fuzzy and I couldn't understand.
I bet the reason is because I had one of the wrong faders up. That's probably why. What I was saying is
just a little fuzzy, just so you know.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, we'll see what we can do about that in the interim. But I do want to repeat what I said, that you've probably grown to love the Zoom meetings over the last year and change.
Don't put words in my mouth. I'm actually working at home more is fine. I get more done in a lot of ways, but the Zoom stuff, I really do like being in the room with people, seeing how they react, and there's just a lot of nonverbal communication that you just miss on Zoom.
Yeah, it's interesting. Steve, tell us a little bit about the reasons that you ran for this position on the Public Regulation Commission.
Well, you know, since I moved to New Mexico back in '04, I've been very interested in energy issues. And when I was in the state Senate, I served on the Conservation Committee, which dealt with energy and environmental issues, and got very close to what the PRC does. And it, even in the state legislature, tends to be a very poor understanding of what the Public Regulation Commission does. So I was always intrigued. And quite frankly, in the Senate, you look at a lot of issues, but you only go an inch deep. And on the PRC, there's two advantages. One is you actually get a salary. And two is that you get to go deep into issues. So this is a mile deep and an inch wide versus a mile wide and an inch deep in the Senate.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what the PRC does, Steve.
So the PRC regulates all kinds of activities in New Mexico. It includes electric utilities, gas utilities, certain water utilities. Regulates transportation, both freight, taxis, Uber. It regulates pipelines. So we cover a lot of stuff.
Let's talk a little bit about Uber and taxis. So we hear a lot about that from other states. Do any of the issues that have appeared in other states seem to be issues here in New Mexico as well, such as those people who are working for Uber?
They're the same issues. They haven't gotten the same same political attention as it have, say, in California. Mm-hmm. I think New Mexico tends to be a little bit more of a libertarian in its sensibilities. So I'm not saying like the Libertarian Party, but just less government getting involved. So it's been less contentious in New Mexico once we got that initial licensing off the ground for those folks.
575-646-2212. Before I let any more time get by, if you have a question for PRC Chair Steve Fishman today on Voice of the Public or comment, we'd love to have you weigh in. And there's lots to discuss. I want to dive right into the proposed merger of PNM and Avangrid. Let's start with a little bit about what the issues were with PNM in the first place that brought us to this place.
No particular issues other than utilities in recent years have been a highly profitable venture, very low risk and very high return. Because of that, there's lots of people who are interested in buying small utilities. And there's an industry trend to create holding companies that own a bunch of utilities. And, from Warren Buffett to a lot of other big players, they see the high profit and low risk, and obviously they try and buy companies up.
Well, let's talk about what some of the stakeholders have identified as the pros and cons. And let's begin with the issues of service on Avangrid's part in Maine and other states and what you've seen along those lines.
So in Maine, there's been a lot of testimony that we've received so far. Shows us that in Maine, costs went way up for consumers after Iberdrola, Avangrid acquired their major utility. And there were a lot of billing problems, the problems getting new billing service up where people felt like, gee, I might be getting cheated on my bill. Lots of penalties for Avangrid put in place. So in Maine, the service has not been great. In Connecticut, I know there was some movement to go to a state-owned utility, some of it based on frustration with an Avangrid-owned utility there. And I know in several other Avangrid-owned utilities in the U.S., they've been levied fines for poor service. And our hearing examiner is looking deeply into all those issues to be sure we understand what's going on there and if these are true performance issues or not and how they might affect New Mexico consumers.
Should utilities remain profit-generating private companies?
There's lots of pros and cons there. What I will say is right now, in my estimation, utilities have the best of both worlds. They have protected profits that, for the level of risk, are much higher profits than the general market would earn. And quite frankly, that's contrary to a Supreme Court decision, but it's a problem across the country. How do you take a business that's much lower risk than other businesses, but over time is earning 1.5 times the return? And of course, customers pay for that. And to me, it's something that needs to be fixed in the regulatory scheme. So they've got that guaranteed profit. And as regulators, there's lots of limitations. We regulate as to rates. That's what our legal authority is. And we approve new projects, new generation, new transmission lines, but we can only exert our approval as to rates. And it's only recently with the new law that passed a couple years ago that we can explicitly consider environment.
I see. And outside of rates, what other methods do these companies use to kind of have their customers pay for their infrastructure? Or is that all built within the rates?
It's built within the rates, and obviously they can go to the financial markets and raise capital there.
One of the other issues that comes up with Avangrid and its parent company, Iberdrola, is what I read to be criminal espionage related to, or alleged criminal espionage related to some of its executives. What do we know about that?
I have not been close to the recent testimony that came out on that. I know there have been accusations that Iberdrola has spied on potential business partners and potentially regulators. So I don't know all the details on that. We have a hearing examiner that's digging into all that. At any given time, there may be 150 different dockets in front of the PRC. So I really have to rely on our hearing examiners to dig into stuff. I let them know what I need to learn, but it's their job to really dig into those details.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it is right now that you're waiting to learn regarding this decision, and do we know when the decision is going to come?
Well, it'll come this year. The hearings with all the parties who have been involved in this case, environmental groups, the Attorney General, various industry players, customers, that's happened. We're waiting to get a recommended decision from the hearing examiner, at which point the full commission, five commissioners, will review what the hearing examiner did and make any final adjustments to what we need to do with our decision. And that includes, do we approve the deal or do we not? If we approve the deal, are there any particular conditions we want to put on it to safeguard consumers? And obviously the first thing we look at is, gee, is this company good at operating utilities? Some of the issues that we have to come up, we also have to look at are, what do we think the impact will be on cost? There's been a lot of arguments by people pro that Iberdrola and Avangrid have a lot of renewable energy experience. They're renewable energy project developers. So proponents say, oh, well, that'll help us do a better job at PNM of developing projects. Opponents say, no, that's a bad idea, because since they're a developer, they're likely to give preference to their own company for building new projects, and that might not be good for consumers. Some people say, well, gee, you get this big company and they've got more resources, it can make stuff happen. Other folks say, well, utilities have no problem raising capital, so we don't need them for that. And gee, maybe it'll put a corporate structure in place that now we don't just have to deal with the local ownership. Now we have to deal with several layers of corporate ownership, and that might make it tougher to reach our goals. It's like a lot of issues. There's pros and cons, and we have to sort through it and decide what makes sense and what doesn't.
Well, and as we move to a more green method of getting our electricity, we wonder, Steve, how much the consumers are going to be impacted, because over the years, depending on where you are, you may have seen significant increases in your average monthly utility cost over the last 10, 20 years. And, you know, as we get older, obviously, and have less monthly income to work with, and those utilities just keep going up, we see people, in some cases, literally being priced out of their homes.
A significant problem in New Mexico. And unlike other states, which have specific rate-making provisions for low-income folks, New Mexico does not. And of course, 40% of the utility, residential, and small commercial customers probably are low-income. And so particularly when it comes to residential and small commercial rates, we can do a better job. And with renewables, what's happening is that there's a lot of things about renewables that can make power cheaper and actually are already doing that. So for instance, one of our utilities just brought on two huge wind farms that clearly over the next 20 years are going to save a ton of money for consumers. The big question becomes, how do we divvy up those savings between customers. And that becomes quite controversial. There are big fights about that that the commission needs to resolve. There is a danger, though, in some of the bringing on some of the renewables. We talk about an interconnected grid, which takes a lot of expensive upgrades to the wiring, transmission, and distribution in those technologies. And it remains to be seen how expensive that will or will not be. So we need to sort that out.
Big questions really all around, and it's such an interesting time, but a little bit nerve-wracking at the same time. And, you know, young people, there was a new survey that was out that about maybe a third or so of young people aged 18 to 24 were very, very disturbed, very worried about the environment and climate change. And so it's a time that there's a lot of anxiety going into this, and that people feel like we need to see change happen fast. Let's talk about the progress in New Mexico on the goal of having 40% carbon-free electricity by 2025. Steve, is that good enough? And what are the odds that we can hit that goal?
So it's looking good with our largest electric utility, PNM. We've approved lots of new renewable resources and lots of new storage resources. And of course, energy storage is crucial to the future. So I believe that we're on a good track at PNM to hit that 40% goal. Our second biggest electric utility, SPS, has already reached that goal of 40% through their big wind investments, and that is going to save consumers a lot of money. They've got a lot of special circumstances that uniquely put them in a position to do that. Unfortunately, a big part of what they do is provide power to oil producers in the Permian Basin. So at least the oil producers are using clean energy now to pump the oil and gas. But obviously we'd like to over time move beyond that. And I think that El Paso Electric, after being very slow and dragging their feet and very conservative, is trying to step up to the mandates, and I think we will achieve it.
Well, let's move on to El Paso Electric. That was next on the list, since so many of our listeners in this area, Las Cruces, are served by El Paso Electric, and we're certainly El Pasoans can relate, certainly glad to be on a different grid than the rest of Texas during that terrible freeze in February. And so we look at something like that and are just so thankful that things worked at El Paso Electric. But it is not without its own controversies. And one of those is the proposed combined cycle gas plant on the Texas-New Mexico state line. Where are we on that project? And what is that project exactly?
They want to build a 280-megawatt combined cycle gas electric generating plant using natural gas. There's lots of folks who, particularly from the environmental community, who believe that renewables and storage are now cheap enough that there's never a reason to build a new gas generating plant, particularly where they're planning to build it. Right up there against Chaparral, where there's already air pollution problems. EVE claims that plant will replace current dirtier plants and have less emissions and throw out less pollutants. In New Mexico, the Public Regulation Commission denied a permit for building that plant, but that plant is being built in Texas. EPE serves both Texas and New Mexico, and they got approval in Texas, so they're going to build that plant to serve Texas customers. But New Mexico will not pay for any power from that plant, then we will not be a customer for that plant. We do not believe it conforms to the recently passed renewable generation law in New Mexico.
Ultimately, what will that mean for Las Cruces EPE customers?
It's a little hard to say. Some will claim that, we'll build some renewable resources to serve New Mexico that will be cheaper than that combined cycle plant. One of our big concerns is that a plant of that size running on natural gas will become obsolete very quickly, and ratepayers will be stuck with a lot of what we call stranded costs in the industry, which basically just means we never got full use of the plant, and because of that, it turned out to be more expensive than anticipated.
Now, does that just mean that the company makes less profit?
No, they will. A stranded cost, generally, if it was an approved project, any stranded costs, the utility will be able to collect. And so it can maintain its 9 or 9.5% return on investment. So that's something that they'll have to deal with in Texas, but we didn't approve it in New Mexico. So New Mexico customers will not have to deal with that.
Similarly, Avangrid also is buying some utilities in Texas that have already been approved. Is that correct?
Now, I don't know if they're – I haven't been following whether they're buying anything in Texas. They may be. I just have to – I haven't looked.
Oh, I read that – I'm sorry, Steve. That was my mistake. PNM's parent company, PNM Resources, also operates in Texas and Texas regulators.
Yeah, they have a small operation in Texas.
Okay.
And that's so, just a very small piece of what they do.
And so when you look at a disaster like what happened on the Texas power grid in February, what does the New Mexico public regulation do when you see something like that happen so close by?
Well, one of the things that happened is gas prices went way up, so electricity generation costs went way up. And New Mexico customers, though they weren't affected on reliability, were affected on cost, because gas prices just spiked up literally a thousandfold. And so over a week, many utilities spent as much buying gas to run their plants as they might have for a full year. And we've had a number of cases come before us where we have to figure out how to spread that cost. We can't ask consumers to pay for that all at once. So we've tried to stretch it out. And that affected Las Cruces utilities, but it also affected El Paso Electric. And there's a kind of an odd contract we have buying some, that EPE has for buying some nuclear power that's based on market electricity prices. And, they want $7 million from New Mexico customers to capture that price spike, and that's currently under litigation in front of the PRC right now.
And how long will that process take?
Well, hopefully we'll decide by the end of the year. It's one that's very much based on legal precedents. It's a very technical legal issue. And actually, there was no true cost that was incurred by El Paso Electric, but their contract for selling that to consumers has a price accelerator, and we have to decide whether it applies or not.
This is fascinating. I've already learned so much. Thank you for coming on today, Steve. Steve Fishman is the chair of the Public Regulation Commission of New Mexico. It's almost 1:30, and 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call. If you have a question for Steve or comment, share your thoughts with us on Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media.
Sorry to interrupt there. I wanted to just do a little bragging about El Paso Electric and the PRC. folks may not be aware that El Paso Electric applied for a rate increase of 6 or 7% late last year. And we made a decision this year that said, no. You don't need a rate increase. You're going to get a 3% rate decrease. And so you were talking about rising prices. And I think the PRC currently is looking very closely at that, and very unusual to get a price drop, particularly after 5 years since their last rate case. So I just want to give us a little credit here.
Well,
we got a 3% decrease.
Thank you for that. And you're right. I would liken it to, you know, the 08 financial crisis. And when we saw gas prices jump to $4 and, you know, airline tickets went up in response by a lot because they had to pay for that fuel. It was like, well, when gas prices go down, but they never did, Steve. And they continue to find other ways to tack on additional expenses.
Well, it's a real challenge. They're private companies, and they come in and they want to get as much money for their investors as they can. And, you know, it's really our job to be sure that consumers are treated fairly. But again, across the country, we need to do a better job. A 9% return for the amount of risk is way above market. And quite frankly, the Supreme Court says they're supposed to get an appropriate return for the risk. That's the U.S. Supreme Court. And it's about time regulators start doing that.
All right. Well, what was El Paso Electric's reaction to that 3% decrease?
They're appealing it to the New Mexico Supreme Court. And one of the issues that they're appealing is they're getting a 9%. We granted them a 9% return. A lot of utilities are getting 9.4%, 9.5%. They asked for 10.5% return. But there was a lot of evidence that pointed to, with the low interest rates currently, quite frankly, I see a lot of evidence that says if we were true to the market, they should be getting 6%. But 9% was as good as I could argue and convince other commissioners to do. Right. And even that got appealed to the Supreme Court. So we'll see.
So this was a political position for you. You ran for office. And in the future, the PRC is going to be made up of appointees. Let's talk a little bit about the advantages and disadvantages of having an appointed commission.
So there's since the PRC was appointed, by the way, up until around the year 2000, and then it went to appointed. And what I hear internally from a lot of folks at the PRC is that when it went from appointed to elected, a lot of people were elected who had very scant knowledge of how the regulatory process works and scant knowledge of the utility industry in general. And that since then, that led to a lot of discouragement within the agency and a lot of talent left. And folks felt like over time, the agency was becoming less and less effective. And I will say that one of my big bugaboos coming in is that it's been very reactive, the PRC. It waits for the utility to propose something and then responds. And by the time we respond, we're kind of locked into what the utility wanted to do. And that's not how the regulatory process should be working. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done to be more proactive as regulators to be sure we get the right results for the public interest. And boy, if you have commissioners who are learning too much on the fly, that's very hard to do. You don't know how to be proactive. It's hoped that if we go back to appointed, we'll have people who can hit the ground running who take these commissioner positions and can restore the effectiveness and the desirability of working for the PRC and get more knowledgeable people, talented people on board.
Now, it's been they've been staggered, the positions, as in election cycles. When will the first appointees show up on the commission?
So it'll move to all appointed on January 1st, 2023. There will only be three commissioners instead of five. One commissioner will be appointed for 2-year term, and the second for a 4-year term, the third for a 6-year term. And thereafter, it'll be 6-year terms for any appointed commissioners. The 6-year term versus 4-year term is a good idea because you want some continuity. The idea that you're rolling between those three positions means no one governor can appoint all three commissioners. There's also a process for being sure there's a nonpartisan group that's set up of experts to develop a list of appointees for the governor to work from. They make their recommendation to a legislative panel, bipartisan, and then from there the governor makes their appointments.
What kind of folks would be on that committee?
The committee is going to be chosen by the bipartisan legislative panel. So let's hope they pick pros. They're the ones who were complaining about the PRC not meeting their standards. So hopefully they'll exercise some standards in appointing their panel.
Do you hope to be an appointee in the future, Steve?
I don't think I will be. I'd certainly would welcome it. So the pros of, I explained the pros. The cons are that when you go to an appointed process, utilities wield a lot of influence in the state. And they donate to these legislators, and they donate to the governor's PAC. And when you go to appointed, that might enable them to wield influence and, you know, get their favored folks appointed. When I ran for office, the utilities spent a ton of money against me. They did not want me to take office.
I was going to suggest that the same would be true on the election side as well, where utilities would be spending money for their favored candidates.
Yeah. And, of course, they should, by law, not be allowed to do that. Utilities only have their business because the legislature and the governor created their franchises. So El Paso Electric has Doñana County exclusively. No one is allowed to compete with them. PNM has its territories exclusively. So does SPS, the whole eastern staff of the state. They only have those territories because it was given to them by government. Well, this is not a very healthy, talk about conflicts of interest. These same legislators now are getting paid or are getting donations from these utilities that they basically granted these very profitable franchises to. Is that something we really want? Do we want our governor and our legislators being influenced by utility money? And quite frankly, the utility money, the utilities use that money to push legislators around. That's how they get elected. They get this money and they use it to run their campaigns. Well, is this the legislature using utilities to collect money for their campaigns? It's a very unhealthy dynamic. And I think we really have to just put the kibosh on any kinds of donations from utilities. And then legislators and regulators might get a lot more brave about serving the public interest rather than the utility interest.
What was your experience when you were a state senator in terms of those efforts?
Generally, I didn't take corporate contributions when I ran, but I did see that sitting in committee, I'd see utility lobbyists with their phones and their hand signals, and on the conservation committee, you know, they'd send a little text to the folks, no, I like this or no, I don't like this. And you'd see the legislators hop too. Extraordinary amount of power that these utility lobbyists held. And quite frankly, it's the legislature that gives these companies their franchises. You'd think it's the legislature would be holding the power over the utilities, the political power. But no, it works the other way around because of the money.
Will having a paid state legislature help? And do you expect we'll see that in New Mexico in the near future?
A paid legislature will not help with that. It would just up the ante. All it would mean is companies would have to spend more money to influence the legislators than they do now. So that won't make the legislature more honest. But what it will do is make the legislature more diverse, is that people who can't afford to run for the legislature now would then be enabled to do that. They could still make a living and serve on the legislature. So that's where that would help out.
All right. And so it would come down to the legislature actually making laws that prevent them from being in that position. And that's really the only way around it?
Yeah. The legislature has to step up and say, nope. We're not going to let that money influence us, and we're going to put a law in place to prevent it.
All right. Well, I won't hold my breath. 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call if you have a question for Public Regulation Commission Chairman Stephen Fishman, who's our guest today on Voice of the Public. I didn't even ask if it was okay to call you Steve.
Yeah, of course. Casey, I'm Steve. You're asking great questions, by the way. And I wanted to let you know, or let your audience know, I can see you on my screen here, and you're not holding your breath and you're not turning blue. And your cynicism, well, it's warranted, but it's sad nonetheless.
Well, it is. And, you know, it's okay, though. I can only hold my breath for, like, maybe 90 seconds. So we have hope. We have hope.
That's pretty good, 90 seconds.
Chime in now if you have a thought, a comment, a question, while we have Public Regulation Commission Chair Stephen Fishman on the line with us. He'll be here until 2 o'clock. And so let's talk a little bit about some concerns that have been raised over the idea of PNM transferring its share of the Four Corners power plant to Navajo Transitional Energy Company. Help us understand that whole big picture.
So when the ETA was passed, Energy Transition Act, in the legislature, and also the revisions to the Renewable Energy Act, this was 2020. One of the things that was said is that when you close a coal plant, you can securitize it, get paid for your stranded assets, if you will, by consumers. But one of the provisions in the Renewable Energy Act side of it was that if you did that, you had to close the coal plant. You couldn't just sell it and have someone else operate it. And that's how the legislation was sold. But it turns out that PNM, in trying to make this deal with the Navajo folks, is dealing with a sovereign nation that is not the United States. And they're saying that law does not apply in this case, and that if we sell our share to this Navajo group, then they can continue to operate the plant, and that's their intention. So they're asking for $300 million to pay for the stranded assets, $300 million from consumers, and they want to transfer this plant and have it continue operating. And so the argument is that many folks say, well, this is a misuse of the legislation and the new law and a misinterpretation. Obviously, the utility doesn't believe it is. And there's lots of arguments going on, pros and cons, and again, very technical legal arguments about whether that's true or not. This has an interesting intersection with the Avangrid merger, because Avangrid wants to call itself a green company, so they don't want to have the coal plant in PNM ownership if their deal is approved. And so even though the coal plant will still be running, they're pushing for the deal to go through. And there are lots of arguments going on that, well, Avangrid claims it's a green company, but they're not really being green here. They're just trying to get something off their books. And so that just adds more to the controversy.
Well, we might get back to this because Tesla obviously recently made an announcement that they'd be going to the Navajo reservation to get around laws governing vehicles being sold by dealerships. And I want to jump into that. But all of a sudden, all of our lines filled up. So let's get to our first caller, Dinah, who's been holding. Thank you for calling Voice of the Public. Hi, Dinah.
Hi. And hi, Steve. Good to talk to you again.
Hi, Dinah. Is Dinah Jenkin?
That's right.
Great to hear from you. What's up?
Well, I've got a question. I've had my solar panels for about 11 years now, and my original contract with El Paso Electric only guarantees my rate for 12 years. And I'm just curious what happens after that. Didn't they change hands? Didn't somebody buy them? Have they changed their policies? What can I look forward to?
The policies haven't changed, but what will happen is your renewable energy credit, your RECs, you will stop getting paid for. You've probably been getting paid, what, 10 or 11 cents per kilowatt hour?
I'm grandfathered in at 12 cents a kilowatt hour.
So that's going to expire at the 12-year mark, and you will not get that credit on your bill any longer. And that was in your original contract, and that hasn't changed.
Oh, darn. Okay. So what would you do now? I know you have solar panels.
Yeah, and I'm getting 13 cents, but my 13 cents just expired. So I was getting paid $50 a month, essentially, from EPE, for my solar panels. Now our bill is pretty much, break even, 10 bucks a month maybe. So that's what will happen to you, something similar to that.
Okay, so no chance with all of this renewable energy push that they're going to change their policy? Or they're not going to be pushed into changing their policy?
In terms of net metering,
yep.
Where you get paid essentially where you get paid the retail rate for any electricity that you use, there's no utilities are always pushing to change that. They don't like it. But I don't see any changes on the horizon in terms of that policy. So at least for the immediate future, next few years, I don't see any big change.
Oh, okay. Well, I was hoping that things were looking a little greener now.
They are. I mean, we're making a lot of progress. One of the reasons is that the renewable energy has gotten cheap enough on a utility scale. The utilities have figured out they can still make money if they generate renewable energy. So as long as they can make money, that's the issue. And I think a lot of those hurdles have been cleared now. Until you get to 60% renewable penetration, a lot of times renewable energy is cheaper, and a lot cheaper, than fossil fuel energy or nuclear energy.
All right, Dinah. Well, thank you for the call. Sorry to see your credits going away.
Condolences, Dinah.
I think we did lose her anyway. But it's okay because we can jump right over to Peter, who has been holding with a question. Good afternoon, Peter. Thank you for calling Voice of the Public. How are you? Hi, Peter. Are you with us? Okay, then. Let's put Peter back on hold, and we'll come back and see if maybe he got another call. And let's go to our next caller, Alex. Hi, Alex. Are you with us?
I am. Can
Thank
you hear me?
You. Yes. Thanks for holding. How are you?
Doing well. How are you all?
Good, good. Thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a quick question. I believe it was last year, El Paso Electric wanted to get permission to open a methane power plant in Doniana County. Is that correct?
Would that be the one we were talking about with the gas plant?
Or maybe it was natural gas.
Natural gas. I think it's Newman 6 is the plant. It's a 280 megawatt. It actually down here, it nets out to 230 megawatt natural gas plant.
And that is going to be built. It's just not going to be paid for or used by New Mexico customers, if I understood you correctly, Mr. Fisher.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious. I didn't hear that part of the program. I'm sorry I tuned in late. Who's going to be paying for that again?
Texas customers. So it'll be used as a power plant to serve Texas, but not to serve New Mexico.
But it's being built here in Doñana County.
No, it's being built just over the border in Texas, just across from Chaparral.
Oh,
so it's on Texas soil.
Okay. Well, my question about that in particular was, I mean, there's going to be a continual need for electricity during the summer because that's the peak time that people are running their air conditioners, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
What can we do legislatively or perhaps even through the PRC to try and encourage local building standards to just use better insulation or more insulation as a requirement for new buildings so that the building itself doesn't actually require more electricity to cool it. It maintains a cooler temperature by virtue of its insulation. How can we accomplish that?
That's legislative, and of course, insulation is only one. There's all kinds of things that can be done from a building standpoint code to make structures more energy efficient. And historically, that's proven to be a very difficult thing in New Mexico. The building trades have a strong lobby, and they don't like code requirements that make building more expensive. I think a lot of times, I am a big advocate of more efficient building and of retrofitting to make buildings more efficient. And a lot of times it could be done a lot more cheaply than the way we go about it now. And I don't want to, I can get into all kinds of details about that. But it's very difficult to get the construction industry to feel comfortable with that. There are more developers who are beginning to understand that the long-term cost of home ownership can be significantly reduced if you just invest a little bit more upfront, and that it's a great proposition for the homeowner and homeowner value. Getting the legislature there is proving to be a challenge. So it's one of those things where you just have to keep plugging away.
I see. So I guess potentially by educating the populace that it's a good proposition for them as homeowners, they'll potentially encourage builders to build better and kind of hopefully influence it that way through kind of the free market side of things.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah. Casey is just so negative today. He's so cynical.
I prefer cynical, yeah.
But anyway, there you go. You got to be... And I don't want to argue with Casey. I love Casey. Anyway, I think through environmental groups is really where you want to push it. You want to push it through the Sierra Club. You want to push it through. There's a number of NRDC, Natural Resources Defense Council. There's a whole group of environmental people, 350, that work with the legislature, and we need to have them keep pushing on these issues.
Consumers can certainly drive a lot of good change, Alex. And so I was just teasing about that. But thank you so much for your call today. Stay cool.
I hear you both. I thank you both. You have a good day.
By the way, we do, in terms of regulating rates, we come up with various, and we're doing better at it at the PRC, we come up with various rate structures that encourage utilities to invest more in convincing consumers to weatherize and make their buildings more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where would I find out information about those various rates?
There's an interesting one where we've got a new TOU rate that we put in place for EPE that is guaranteed that you cannot end up spending more money on it. If you end up spending more money on it, you get a refund at the end of the year, and you can drop the rate. But we set it up so that it's far more attractive than it ever was, And actually, I encourage all EPE customers, residential and small commercial, to sign up for the new TOU rate. So at the TO, the time of day rate basically charges you a lot more for a kilowatt during peak usage hours from 3 to 7 p.m., but a lot less for electricity the other 20 hours of the day. And it encourages the utility and it encourages customers to invest in things that lower that peak hour usage. And it saves money for everybody because the utilities have to pay as many assets for, to serve the peak, and consumers get a lower electricity bill.
Got it.
So I really encourage you to take a look at that.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Alex. Have a great weekend. And it looks like we do have Peter back on the line. He never left. He just accidentally pushed his mute button, kind of like Zoom, but on his cell phone, right? Hi, Peter. Are you still with us?
Yes, I am. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Do we still have time for questions?
Peter was just dissing us. you were just punking us, Peter. This is Peter Goodman, I can tell.
We have 4 minutes, Peter, to answer your question.
I've been outed. Okay. Well, I have two. One is, I think there's a fatal flaw, and I'm asking you to either agree or disagree, and if you agree, how the hell do we solve it? There's a fatal flaw, whether we have an appointed or elected PRC, that utilities get their money as basically a percentage of their expenditures or capital expenditures. So there's an encouragement to them, A, to be wasteful, and B, to build things as opposed to kind of make things happen without a capital expenditure. Mm-hmm. And I see that as a problem. Do you see it as a problem? And if so, how do we get out of that? What would be better and fairer to all, everybody?
It is a problem. I wouldn't call it a fatal flaw, but it's a significant one. And quite frankly, PNM, and this is public record, was basically caught with their fingers in the till, both with nuclear plants and coal plants, making investments that weren't not necessary, or intentionally spending more money to make an investment because the more money they spend because of this guaranteed return, the more money they make. And across the industry, there's more of a movement towards performance-based rate making, which would switch compensation more to how well are you doing in terms of cost control, reliability, progress on environmental goals, and it shifts more of the compensation to that. There's some folks that have done some preliminary performance-based recovery for utilities, and it's had mixed results. Utilities have huge legal and financial staffs, and they've tricked regulators into giving them some things that actually make them more profitable than they were before. So we have to have enough firepower on the regulatory side to implement performance-based compensation in a way that's more fair to consumers.
Thank you. Probably no time for my second question.
It's coming up to 1:59. Peter, so
I'll be real quick. My sense of things is there were prior to the last PRC election, there were a lot of situations where a hearing examiner made what I personally thought was a reasonable decision, and the PRC overruled that. Has, regardless of specific cases, in general, have PRC votes been more consistent with the hearing examiner's recommended decision since the last election?
My sense is that the current commission is a lot better about that, and that's because they're not as prone to having ex parte discussions with utilities. And without naming names, I think there were certain commissioners who were talking behind the scenes with the utilities, and that was influencing their decisions. And this commission, I think, has put a stop to that.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
What do you know? We got them both in.
Okay. Well, thank you, Casey. Bye.
Thank you. Have a great weekend, Peter. And Public Regulation Commission Chair Steve Fishman, thank you so much for giving us this time this afternoon. And there were still some items that we didn't even get to touch on today. So perhaps we can catch up again soon, maybe once the decision has been made on Avangrid, the Avangrid and PNM merger. And is there still an opportunity for anyone to offer their comments?
Yes, you can send comments to the PRC, and they all go on file. And though they're not evidence in the case, they do set a sense of what the public interest is. You can't decide the public interest if you don't listen to the public about what they think their interest is.
All right. Well, if you're interested, let the Public Regulation Commission know how you feel. And our time is coming to an end. Have a great weekend, Steve.
You too. Thanks. Great job.
Thank you so much. And up next, it's Leora Zeitlin with Intermezzo by Request. Enjoy, and Fred Martino back with you this afternoon at 4 for All Things Considered.